Welcome to 180 Degrees, brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland and supported by the Government of Ireland. Our mission is to be at the heart of Ireland's energy revolution.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of 180 Degrees, focusing on how we generate and use heat in our homes, buildings and industry in Ireland. My name is Jim Shear and I'm Head of Data and Insights at the SEAI, and I'll be chatting to my colleague Margie McCarthy, the Director of Research and Policy Insights at SEAI, about the National Heat Study. Margie, welcome to the podcast. To start with, could you tell us a bit about what our team does at SEAI?
Thanks, Jim. I'd be delighted to. I'm honoured to work with you amongst others, but a range of people who are experts in data analytics, in research, in the technical expertise for technologies looking to the future of our energy decarbonisation journey. And so really our team is responsible for collating data around how we produce or how we source fuels to deliver our energy, how we transform that, and then how we consume it at the end. So all parts of that puzzle, and releasing data on that, and then also looking at behavioural insights in that area. And then using, I suppose, that information and others to identify where there might be research gaps and funding research in that area. But using all of that information at our fingertips across the team's expertise then to model for the future. So looking at scenarios and options for us to decarbonize all of our energy use for 2050. And so I suppose that's what we're here today, one of the outputs from that.
That's brilliant. That's a great overview. And so we're here today, as you said, to zoom in on what's been called the National Heat Study. Could you tell us a little bit about what it's about?
Yeah, sure. So the National Heat Study is, it's a comprehensive analysis, I will say, at the very least. A look at heating in Ireland, and it trails back to, I suppose, Ireland and its requirement to have a comprehensive assessment of heating and cooling in Ireland. And at the time we worked with government at SEAI to identify, I suppose, the heat sector as one of those areas that we really need to work on in terms of reductions of our heat emissions. And to be able to do that in a constructive and evidence-based way, we needed more evidence at our fingertips. And so what the heat study does is it looks at the way in which we use heat in Ireland across all sectors. And that's one of the really interesting things about the study, is it delves into each of the sectors. And then the different factors affecting that. So the way we use technologies currently, or maybe future-facing technologies, and how that could play in to creating solutions for how we may move forward. And then our final report is looking at, well, different scenarios and modelling out what that could look like and different pathways to decarbonising heat for 2050. So that's, I suppose, an overview of what the report does. And then what we tried to do is deliver a summary, which was a useful and meaningful document at the end of all of that, to identify key actions based on all of the findings and insights for pathways and how we move forward. And really that's for, well, it's for policymakers, right? So to inform the decisions that they have to make, difficult and challenging decisions, but also for everybody who has a part to play. And that's each and every one of us, citizens living in our homes or business owners or industry owners, to understand how we use heat and what solutions might be facing forward. So it's for everybody, with some detailed actions in there for policy.
It's clearly a very detailed topic, and I think anyone listening will quickly be able to identify where they use heat in their lives, like be that in their home, in their gas or oil boiler, or maybe you're on renewables, or maybe you have a heat pump, electric heat pump. And a lot of businesses use heat too. So we've looked in depth at industry. And I suppose a lot of the work we do, as you said, it's highly analytical in nature. And in order to do that, we've spent a lot of years building what we call the National Energy Modeling Framework, which of course we've put to work in this project. So we've gathered new levels of data. So we've looked at industry, for example, and how industry uses heat at different temperatures, what technologies it uses to generate that heat at those temperatures, and what fossil fuel sources they're using. We've gathered a lot more data on the building sector as well, and all of that's in the reports. So there's 8 technical reports with all of the background data that we collected. and put through our national energy modelling framework. And I think it's just wanted to say a couple of things about that, so listeners had a sense of how we go about modelling that. And you know, we don't model every single building in Ireland, we or every single industrial application. We generate these models which represent, we have 680 different archetypes in the model, so different building types, different ownership models, different industrial processes, and we use those to represent all of that heat use in Ireland. We put in all of the information we gather as part of our energy balance, so we understand what fossil fuels are being used. And I think what's novel about what we do is we look at a consumer uptake perspective. So we don't assume that if things are economical that they happen anyway. Something first has to trigger a consumer to make a decision in the model, and it's true in the real world too. For example, your boiler gets to the end of its life, or an industrial process is being redesigned, and our model then looks at and presents those consumers with different options that they can pick, and then looks in detail at the costs and benefits of those different options in terms of the policy package and also all of the options available. So we've built that model as part of this project with the internal team of SEII people and also the outside help of expert consultants. And we've run a number of scenarios to explore how we might decarbonize heat fully by 2050. So net zero, essentially getting completely off fossil fuels by 2050. And for those fossil fuels we can't, working out how we're going to capture the emissions from those. We've looked at pathways that maximize the gas grid as a vector for providing the likes of biomethane and hydrogen. We'll talk about that. We've looked at a focus on electricity and using renewable electricity as the main vector. We've looked at balances of those two and learning from those. We've looked at the fastest way we can get emissions out of heat in Ireland. So it's probably the deepest dive we've made on this. It's got the most detail behind it, the most evidence, and I think raises a lot of very important insights that we're going to talk about over the course of this podcast. But Maggie, you might just bring us back. Why the heat sector? Why did we go to all this effort to look at all the detail we have, particularly for the heat sector in Ireland?
I mean, we're all probably sitting in homes or offices or businesses that are heated in some way. So we use heat in our everyday lives in Ireland. And then we have obviously some players, as you outlined, some industry actors who have to use heat within the processes to make things that we use in our everyday lives. So it really does permeate everywhere. And why is it important for us to look at it? Well, I'm going to throw some statistics out. So 94% of our heat is fueled by fossil fuels currently. So that is a very significant amount of this. There's no question about that. And what we know is we are gearing towards decarbonisation and net zero carbon emissions by 2050. But we also know that heat is currently, so the sector is currently responsible for almost a quarter of the greenhouse gas emissions in this country. So we're talking about a quarter of the problem and probably the area where we have achieved least to date. And so understanding what are the different parts in this machine and all the different pieces of the jigsaw that we have to help solve, it's important to have something as comprehensive as the heat study to help us with that. And where does that sit within, I suppose, the international conversation? Well, we know, obviously, well, I hope most people know, we've seen a definite increase in the media around conversations around COP, for example, and the, I suppose, the fear and also the pathways that are being outlined at the moment amongst general citizens and policymakers. But we've seen that cascade down through Europe and into a national context where, you know, last year we had the Climate Act signed into law, some of our most ambitious steps forward in terms of climate action, with legally binding pathways to net zero for 2050 and to reduction by 51% by the end of this decade. So no easy feat there either. And what the Act does is provides a framework for Ireland to meet all of its international and EU climate targets. So people will have heard, no doubt, conversations around carbon budgets coming into play. And what's in conversation now is sectoral ceilings, you know, where each sector will have to play its part in trying to achieve the targets within our, we say targets, but they are legally binding now within the budgets. And then we've seen, obviously reactions. SEAI, for example, we're publishing this report and have a big arm to our organization in terms of providing insights and data and research. But we also have a big arm in terms of supports and grants, and we would have seen, you know, a very large program announced recently with grants and aid helping people to upgrade their building and their homes. So those kind of things are all coming into play, but these are all parts of the puzzle in terms of helping us to deliver our targets and ambitions for heat reductions.
Yeah, I really get that. And some very stark figures there on the very low portion of renewables right now. You know, we know heat emissions have been increasing for the last number of years, and they need to go down in a hurry. So I think that that sets up very well. And you talked as well about the momentum on the policy side, and that's clear too, you know, with the Climate Act now in place and the carbon budgets coming, as you said, and the last Climate Action Plan had hundreds of measures in it, and some of those referred to this heat study coming. So the government's been well aware it's been coming, and we've made now a number of findings based on this process we've gone through, and we imagine that they'll find their way into the next Climate Action Plan, at least some of them, as the government keeps the momentum up. So I'd like, guess let's get into what the study is telling us and the kinds of actions that the study recommends, because I think that's what most people will be interested in, what's new and what's coming in the context of that urgency. So could you give us a high level in terms of what you think some of the key findings are, Margie?
Sure, Jim. So like we chatted about at the beginning, we tried to condense this into the key insights and then key actions to act now, decide now, or investigate now. So where maybe additional work is needed. But the overriding message, as with all things climate, is we need to act now. Urgency is the biggest message we need to get across. And as you said, we looked at a number of scenarios, a number of pathways to achieving the net zero by 2050. And really, when you look at that in terms of cumulative emissions, the key insight from the study is actually being able to deploy technologies that are available to us today and at scale is going to help us to deliver the least cumulative emissions. So doing it at pace. So that rapid scenario, which was the last scenario we looked at, really is about upping the ante in terms of delivery and unprecedented effort being deployed. So one of the key kind of no regrets movement forward from the study is to plan and prioritize district heating. So trying to get this out and delivered at scale across the country as quickly as possible. So what the heat study found is that district heating, so to explain district heating, I suppose it's a way in which surplus, I like to use the word surplus heat, I heard that through Mary Donnelly, rather than waste heat, but taking heat from, for example, industry, capturing that and delivering it through insulated pipework networks to homes or public buildings. And that heat then, that will then provide heat for their space and also for their water. So kind of our key needs in those scenarios. So what we find in the study is that district heating is actually economical in much more lower heat densities than was previously assumed. And that we're seeing that district heating could actually deliver as much energy as the gas grid by 2030s, and that there's real potential not just in urban areas, but also in large, kind of the larger regional towns. So it could deliver up to 50% of the building demand or heat demand. A big player in that is heat pumps, so they will play a role in district heating. But another finding of the heat study is actually heat pump deployment across the country is a key focus. They provide about 40% of the heat across the country by 2050 on the kind of max deployment in the scenarios. So it's a really available technology. People have seen this technology obviously appearing and populating out in our neighborhoods and homes and in businesses. But that's the key thing. It is applicable across homes and businesses and needs to be deployed at scale. And so we've seen some of the Climate Action Plan already pointing to that. And in fact, we just spoke about the large retrofit program, and key part of that was upping the grant available for heat pump deployment. There are challenges there, obviously, in terms of the delivery of heat pumps, actually installation. Do we have enough people to do that? Will people know how to operate them properly and all of that? And of course, all of this rapid deployment of kind of available technologies is quite dependent on us reaching our ambitions for renewables on our electricity grid, because that's electrifying. It's electrification of the heat sector, and so we need the grid to also be reliant on renewables. So there's a big target, as we know, there for 80% renewables by 2030. So we need that as well.
It's a really interesting first tranche of recommendations. And I guess where I'm coming from there is these are technologies like district heating and heat pumps that have both been proven in other member states around Europe, certainly those with the highest proportion of renewable heat. We're only at about 6% renewable heat. Those that are at the upper end of it all have district heating networks, so it's a proven technology. It's something Ireland needs to really catch up on. And I know there'll be a lot of momentum on it now on the back of these findings. And there's already some work out there happening on it. There's a couple of demonstration projects in Dublin. And also this study says that, that potential you talked about, that 50%, isn't just in the cities around Ireland, but also a lot of the towns where there's, sufficient heat density to justify a district heating network. So some towns that are on oil might find that there's, the government's looking to establish and support the establishment of district heating networks in those towns. And but I guess that the two technologies are also on the supply side. So something we talk about a lot over the last number of years in SEAI is energy efficiency first, and it's part of our mission. And so I think, it's interesting that two sort of supply side technologies have come up in the mix here. And I think it, the reason we've focused on efficiency for so long is really have flowed from those EU directives on energy efficiency. And it's certainly a very cheap way to take carbon out of the system. But when we looked at this through that rapid decarbonisation lens that you talked about, I guess what showed up was the need to shift more quickly away from the fossil fuel supply, like the boilers. And I think one of the key findings that I found most interesting from the study was that, whilst we need to continue to focus on energy efficiency, it's likely that the emphasis will be on the cheaper to install measures, for example, in a house like the cavity wall or the insulation, for which the grants are now something like 80%, I think, for those two measures. So that a house is ready for a heat pump, so that they're more quickly and earlier in their spend profile, if they have a budget for making an upgrade, that they more soon in that budget they get off the fossil fuel heating supply, rather than perhaps going all in on fabric and keeping an oil or gas boiler. So I think that's a very interesting finding of the study, and it'll challenge us to evolve that policy package in that direction. And I think there's already some strides being made in that direction with the recent announcement. And I think the other thing that I found interesting there, Margie, was the interplay of those two solutions. So where there are district heating networks, do we want people to get on a heat pump at the same time, or do we want them to wait for a district heating network and do efficiency? So I know that there's been a lot of spatial mapping done for this project as well. So we've detailed maps of heat demand in Ireland now online as part of this study, and heat supply. You talked about those waste heat that can feed into district heating. There's also obviously going to be renewable heat feeding into those through large-scale heat pumps. Maybe there's some bioenergy heating sources being used in industry, and the heat from those are being used in networks too. So there's a real link to spatial planning and where we develop the solutions at the right time, and how policy focuses and guides consumers in buildings or in industry to upgrade in line with this real rapid decarbonisation pathway, which is the one that the study seems to be pointing at as being the cheapest and the best for the planet. So yeah, I think some really interesting technologies that are available now was the other emphasis that you were giving us there. So, not waiting around for some of those future technologies, but we don't leave those out. So we've considered a lot of the future technologies in the study too. There's been lots of conversations around bioenergy and hydrogen and those kind of issues. Could you say a little bit about beyond the immediate, what do we need to do now for that next tranche of technologies that might be coming?
Sure, Jim, and just on what we were saying about spatial analysis as well, I mean, that's obviously a key thing we feel is coming from the study and a real benefit of the outputs from this. It should be useful for so many people in policy making decision level at local government, and so that's a really, really useful piece. And as you said, we also looked beyond the that electrification of the heat sector and some of those more immediate deployable solutions. So there are other technologies that are playing their part, and they're at varying degrees depending on the scenario that we talk about. One, for example, is in the bioenergy side. So the availability of, for example, biomethane, the use of biocrops. And really what the study did is it went into that in a huge amount of detail, looking at if we take a step away from the national perspective for a minute, at an EU level, there is significant regulation around the kind of sustainability governance of the growing bioenergy crops. And while we were looking through this potential for Ireland, it's very obvious that the land areas that are available for bioenergy will likely fall out of the applicability for the EU level regulation. And so one of the key findings from the study is to ensure that we implement nationally appropriate sustainability governance for bioenergy crop cultivation, to make sure that we're realizing the potential of bioenergy in Ireland whilst not compromising emissions in other sectors by doing that. And a big part from your spatial piece and signals for the future is understanding where bioenergy will play its part. Where should it play its part? In what industries? And another part to that is decarbonized gas. So looking at hydrogen, and hydrogen is always a big feature of any energy conversation at the moment. Especially, we mentioned already our renewable energy target for Ireland being 80% for 2030. So we have a huge resource of wind off the coast of Ireland, and really that allows us to have the imagination around where hydrogen could and should be used. So a key part of the study actually is making decisions about the role of the future gas grid and where does hydrogen play its role. Is it on the grid? Is it off the grid? And identifying which sectors are most applicable. So, aviation is one that has been mentioned in the past. But for sure, the study is certainly telling us that the gas grid plays a diminishing role into the future. And that's largely because, as I said at the beginning, when you look at the cumulative emissions, if we wait to deploy technologies like decarbonized gas, so we're expecting hydrogen won't be available at scale until the mid-2030s. So if we wait to deploy that at scale, the cumulative emissions over the period of time between now and 2050 will be higher. Whereas if we deploy those technologies like we mentioned, district heating and heat pumps, etc., now, then our cumulative emissions are lower. But what it also means is we're moving consumers away from the existing gas grid onto those technologies. And what that means, by the time hydrogen comes into play, there's questions that we need to answer today to give signals to the future as to, well, who will be using that grid, because the costs to maintain and operate that grid remain the same. And so we need to understand, well, what is the future economical and also consumer use of that grid. So they're kind of questions for the future that the study is drawing out and really asking in terms of our policy and our industry players, etc., to make decisions, because the clear decisions need to be made so that we can then start planning and building appropriately.
Yeah, I think it's what's really interesting about your answer there is it brings out the interaction not only of the different technologies and end users and things like that, but it obviously brings in this time element, which is sort of like, when will technologies be commercially available? And you talked about green hydrogen from wind, not until sometime after 2030, and the impact that can have on cumulative emissions. So there's a lot in this report and in the sort of construction of the different scenarios that sheds light on that cumulative emissions piece that you talked about. There's a lot of work being done on the costs of the different infrastructure that you mentioned as well. So, what sort of, if we were going on decarbonized gas to buildings, what sort of infrastructure would be needed? Yeah, we acknowledge it's going to be slower decarbonization, but it could also be more costly. So we've explored that, and all of those issues are presented in the various technical reports and in the final summary report as well. And it seems clear, a clear call for policymakers there to really get organized around this and to start to consider some of those big system level decisions and make them now. So not just the action now, but also the decisions now is where I heard a lot of talk there, and the need also then to continue to research for the next wave of policy. And we might say a little bit more about that. So there's a lot of challenge already built in there, and there's big transition, there's big systems and big change, and that'll need to happen. And then there's a lot of sort of individual consumer change that'll happen as well. So you start to imagine a future in 2030, which is only, just shy of 8 years' time, and then longer term to 2050, where our energy system for heat and for electricity and transport, but here we're talking about heat, looks a lot different to it does today, from the outside. But for the consumer, they'll still have heat. It'll probably be from a renewable source, whether it's district heating or a heat pump or some kind of biofuel in industry or whatever, or hydrogen, as you said. So we're really trying to look for the horses for courses solutions across all of that. So there's a lot more detail in the Net 50 reports that are available online on that. One of the big challenges, I guess, that came up as in the modelling, and I think it's very evident, is that there are some harder to decarbonize sectors, particularly in industry, where perhaps really high temperatures are needed and current technology mightn't be available for some of those processes. How has the study taken that on board, and what sort of perspectives does the study give for those harder to decarbonize industrial sectors?
Sure. So, I mean, you could take a step away, look at this globally. There are kind of key industrial sectors that are users of very high temperatures in the process, and they're delivering some of the products that underpin our everyday lives, as I was saying at the start. So, if you look at, for example, our ambitions and targets in terms of offshore renewable energy, that will require very, very substantial amounts of construction materials, if we think of it that way, and so the cement industry. Then we have other industrial, like plastics and pharma industries, all high heat users. And as you said, not there aren't an awful lot of very readily available technology solutions currently to help alleviate or provide a full pathway to decarbonize them. And so what we need to do, and what the study is saying, is what happens and often in this budgeting process is negative emissions are taken into account. And so, is there ways in which, for example, we could use bioenergy and then carbon capture so that you now have a negative emission, and that will balance out where you may have to continue to use a fossil fuel for longer than you had hoped in another sector? And so what the study really is saying is we really need to hammer down to what is the role of negative emissions in our decarbonisation plan. And informed by that, then we need to outline and plan out, plot a path, so to speak, for carbon capture and storage. And really, one goes hand in glove with the other for us to be able to plan that appropriately. And all of that really comes into the sectoral information that's available in the heat study, and again, the spatial information that's available. And what it really all points to us, both of those actions, for instance, is signals that need to be very clear to the market and to all consumers and users and deliverers, producers, supply chain, of what is the intention. So where are we going with this? And so one of the key things coming from the Decide Now recommendations identified in the heat study is just identify clear signals on the timetable for elimination of fossil fuels, because ultimately that's where we have to get to. And as I said, negative emissions can play a part in there, but we need to eliminate fossil fuels to really decarbonize the sector. So we know from the study and looking at the consumer behaviors that really, homeowners will make you and me, if we're making a decision about an oil or a gas boiler, we're really only going to do that once every 15 years. From an industry perspective, if you're looking at larger pieces of kit here, boilers, you're probably going to stretch that out to 25 years. So we're currently at 2022, and we have a plan to go out to 2050 to decarbonize. That's not a whole lot of decision points available to us to actually affect this change. And whilst We've seen indicators in other areas. So in other sectoral changes, giving a clear signal will make a difference. But even in climate, for example, in Ireland, a deadline was put in around your petrol or your diesel vehicle and when you can purchase them. And we've already seen an uplift now in electric vehicles. And people can see, right, if I'm making a decision today, then probably need to have this as part of the equation and act on it. And that's what a timetable will do for activity and consumer behavior into the future. So that's a big part of the study. In terms of then beyond that, the study does identify further areas for investigation. So, there's things in there that we feel we've talked about hydrogen a good bit already today, but hydrogen could play a bigger role if we could deliver it quicker and cheaper. And so accelerating that and investigating further means, okay, well, we could reassess this if we thought that those two things could be overcome, because hydrogen is a two-step process. You have to make it first and then deliver it. So instead of capturing wind and it goes straight into the system, you have to use wind to produce hydrogen, and then if that's the option, you go with green hydrogen. So it is an expensive option, but if it could be made in a more cost-effective way and accelerated, it could be a bigger player. We also know from looking at the study that we need to take a step away from looking at it as we have done, which is decarbonizing the energy sectoral emissions. And also, how does the economy perform in a decarbonization scenario? So, and also how could new business models play out that would help support industry who are trying to decarbonize to remain competitive and to overcome the challenges there? So overall, the study points to those types of further work that could be done, but ultimately what it tries to do is identify what we can act on now. And as we said, it's about deploying fast, about looking at things spatially, making sure we're making those informed decisions as to where the best incentives and policy measures are being deployed. Then decide now so that we have indicators into the future for people so they know clearly what to expect and what's going to be the outcome of their actions, and then investigate further so that we can explore more some of those solutions that maybe aren't fully developed but could have a bigger part to play as we move forward.
So, Margie, there's clearly a lot of detail in the study. A lot of modeling's gone into it. A lot of consultation happened as part of the process, I know too. And there's a lot of reports and a bunch of data online for people to get their teeth into. From your point of view now, where do we go from here? We've got this evidence base in place. The policymaking system is listening, but what's crucial for next steps?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point, Jim. This whole study throughout its lifetime has been hugely engaged and consultative across the very many actors in the heating space. So, that's been a key part of it. And so hopefully now for all of those stakeholders, finally having the study at their fingertips is really useful and informative. But beyond that, we said earlier that in the Climate Action Plan, there was already indicators towards the heat study informing further actions. Already in the Climate Action Plan, there's discussion around, heat pump deployment. There's discussion around how much district heating will play its part, and also about identifying routes and ways in which we can decarbonize the heat sector and actual roadmaps towards that. So really, I suppose what the heat study is doing is it's planting that seed and starting the foundations, huge amount of foundational work done there. So part of our role in SEAI is to try and get that into the hands of as many people as possible. As we've said during the podcast, the sectoral information is immense in this study. And so it's really by digging into those reports that people will get an awful lot more detail if in their own interest area. But I said it earlier and I'll say it again, the most important message here is acting fast. And actually, if you're a homeowner listening to this, check out the retrofit program. Try and do whatever you can to insulate your home or your business. to make sure that you get off fossil fuels and onto a heat pump technology as quickly as possible. So maybe slightly change the focus of mind in terms of all of the work of your insulation being for insulation's sake, but rather insulating to the stage in which you can make sure you get off and onto a low carbon technology. And also for industry and businesses, so who maybe don't have as readily available solutions, part of this study and part of our role is to get this into the hands of the supply chain. So for people who are actually delivering some of those solutions for industry, how can we enable them with the support coming from the heat study to make sure they're getting that information into the decision makers at the industry side? Because it's big investments for them, and it does, as we said, play out in terms of their business model and competitiveness. So really, it's about acting fast and making sure taking on board these insights and that they inform national policy is our number one goal here, because that is what activates change quickest with signals. But number two, at an individual ownership basis, that owners of homes, businesses and industry across Ireland take on board are at least aware of the heat sector, the emissions it's causing, and some of the solutions that are available to them to act today.
Excellent. So please get energized, get into action, as is the call there. Read the reports and take some action where you can. It's been really great talking to you, Margie, and thanks to the listeners for putting the time into listening to us. And we look forward to keeping the conversations going and getting the action happening.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you've enjoyed it, then please like, share, and subscribe to our podcast. You'll find previous episodes on our website, seai.ie/podcast, along with information about our grants and supports. Until next time.